Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
All right, good people, welcome, welcome, welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast. Rate, review, subscribe on your podcast feeds. YouTube, like, subscribe. A very special person is here today. Adam Silver's BFF, William Liu. How are you?
I was going to say, man, you stole my line. I used to say that.
Yours was hello and welcome. I made sure I didn't repeat that. So I went with welcome, welcome, welcome. Yeah. It was flagged to me that I did it once by accident. And someone said it to me. No, they didn't. And they said it to me. It's like, didn't William Liu say this? And I was like, okay, well, I didn't realize that. So I switched it.
It's all good, man. It's all good. I'm happy to come on. Appreciate it. You know, everyone wants to talk about Raptors Magic. No, I'm kidding. This is actually the one show today. I'm not going to be talking Raptors Magic unless you insist on it. But I mean, yeah, I appreciate you having me on, is what I'm trying to say.
The Raptors offense. That's why I brought Will on, someone who's following this team very closely amongst all of us. And just seeing like where we are, what we've learned, and where things are going to go forward. I think that's kind of where we're wondering where this team goes. Like, what is the ceiling? It's how good can they be in their half court offense? How well can they execute defensively? We know how good they can be. They could be top five, but also bad offense leads to bad defense too at the same time. So factoring that all in together, just general points like, where are you with the Raptors offensively in terms of how they find success? What are those like couple of things that they're like, okay, we know we can get a good possession if we do this?
I mean, if they give the ball to Pascal in the post, it's generally been really good. If they get the ball to Scottie to do anything on the court, is generally been pretty good. I also think that if there was like a third option, I think Dennis and Jakob in the pick and roll have some pretty good chemistry. Maybe not the most efficient version of a pick and roll, just because you know, Yak is not a threat to shoot at all, so there's no popping option there, and obviously Dennis isn't really taking pull-up threes or shouldn't be taking pull-up threes. You know, it's not his best skill, so you're primarily looking to get like a decent two, which definitely does cap your efficiency. But those are kind of your three options. As the lights turn off here in this meeting room this meeting room that I've commandeered, all good, sorry about that. But
lights turn off on the Yak and Dennis pick and roll.
Oh man, wow, it's like pathetic fallacy over here. But no, seriously, like those are the three options. I mean, look, there's other things that you can do. It's just that will work kind of situationally, but primarily speaking, like that's how the Raptors are going to get their points half court.
Well, I'm happy you mentioned that Yak and Dennis pick and roll, because that's kind of where I want to pivot to. That is like probably their highest usage version of the pick and roll. Second one being like Scottie Barnes and I suppose Jakob Poeltl as well. And there's good things that they do, but also there's some of the flaws that we've mentioned. What are the good things that they do? I see like, you know, Dennis can get downhill, and he's actually told me post game a few games ago, like he realized after looking at film that he wasn't pursuing his own shot enough in terms of driving to the basket and bending defenses. And that's one of his strongest attributes is speed. And so you put that in, then all of a sudden those dump off passes to Yak can kind of flow a little bit. But anyways, as you were.
Yeah, I mean, I think Yak for the most part has been shooting well. I know there's like some games where I'm like, okay, he dropped the ball here or he missed a layup here. Like that's just going to happen. Like, but overall, the numbers are saying that Yak is shooting 78% on the roll, which is amazing. I actually don't think you could shoot better than that on the roll most times. But Yeah, I think the issue really is that you don't have any threat to sort of like hit pull-ups. I mean, like you see Dennis hitting mid-range pull-ups a decent amount. That space is always there because teams are almost always dropping back deep drops against this grouping. And so there is an artificial limit to what they can get out of it just because the three is just not a factor for either guy. But even Dennis, I think, is shooting okay in pick and rolls. Like he's shooting 46%. In the pick and roll overall, his effective field percentage, I think it's 46.8, which means basically all of it is on twos. Like there's like very, very marginal amount that is on threes. But and so that's what's going to hold them back because like, yeah, I mean, like obviously when you think about pick and rolls play nowadays in the NBA, like you're going to see a lot of pull up 3-point shooting. You can see some pick and popping. You know, my only gripe with this is like sometimes Dennis could be a little turnover prone. Like, I think his turnovers on pick and roll right now are like 16%.
So yes, it is.
I want to see that drop down to like probably ideally like we've seen there's like players like Tyus Jones are like 3%. You know what I mean? And so like I'm not expecting him to be like leading the league in reducing turnovers, but maybe even getting down to like 7 or 8. Because I think generally speaking, there's a great connection there. Like Dennis has a really creative and slick way of finding Yak on these roles, but at the same time, you know, again, without the three, you're just gonna be pretty limited.
Yeah, and we've seen them try things over time. I noticed after that Celtics game where they also use a lot of low angle pick and roll, and that's when the Raptors started using that against the Pistons. And there was one play, it was off a reset, but they did it and it worked. And I'm wondering if how much can they activate that aspect. And you mentioned the mid-range shots for Dennis. They are kind of popping off, and he is trying the floaters more. It's not going to be the Trae Young level of execution, but it's there for him. And they talk so much, and I'm talking Darko, it's about angles and how can they get movement going into these pick and rolls. And I think this is like part of the steps for them, but considering how good Jakob Poeltl is as a role man, like I think he's at what 1.37 points per possession. And that's around Lauri Markkanen. That's around JV. That's a solid number. And so that's like a great starting ground is how do you make sure you're getting the ball to him? And some of that is going to be on Dennis is to make sure that he is a threat at a few levels. Maybe it's not going to be the three because he doesn't have that pull-up shot very consistently. He's got kind of a slow release, but at the same time, he's got the pull-up going and he's feeling the flow of it. I think he's got the autonomy to take those shots and he's encouraged. And he's, you know, to his credit, like he is getting better and better at it, right? He said he wanted to get better at it and he's continuing to make strides there. So how much better it gets, like that's kind of where I land is like, how close are we to the ceiling of it? Yeah, how close are we to the ceiling of this? Yes,
that's really it. Like, yeah, of course, like you can get to, you could disguise the plays. You know, you can, you know, approach it from different ends. You can improve your spacing. Those things all definitely matter when you're talking about this pick and roll. But like, I mean, again, like Yak's probably not going to shoot higher than 80% on the roll. Like, at a certain point, you got to be able to offer different threats. And it's even hard to always find Yak when, as you mentioned, Dennis isn't presenting himself as a scoring threat as well. So, I think this should be your third option on offense. I actually wouldn't mind seeing some of this with the bench as well. We see some of the bench groupings struggle. I think a Yak and Dennis pick and roll with some bench groups out there, and then they basically never use this group with the bench, but if they did it out there, you might bring some more organization, because I think that's probably one of the issues with the bench in the last couple of years. Just don't see much organization with that group when they really start to struggle, when they really start to slide. Second quarter against the Celtics, again, when I talk about the bench, the lights turn off. It's like motion censored, so like if I just sit still, like it doesn't, it will just turn off. It happened when I was interviewing Gary as well. It was the exact same seat, but like the bench could use some organization. And I do think that overall, Yak and Dennis running pick and roll does bring a nice organization to the offense. Like, it feels very satisfying when they do finally connect on a pick and roll and, you know, Yak gets a layup inevitably.
Yeah, through the leg pass. Dennis loves that.
Shovel pass, man. You know, behind the back, all sorts of stuff. Yeah, he's very crafty.
Indeed he is. Does he have a Sportsnet, like, fanny pack or anything like that, a Sportsnet jacket? Does he have anything like that? Yeah,
we got to get him some gear. You're right, man. Let me ask DT. It's probably going to be a Sportsnet water bottle.
DT would love that kind of stuff. I know that, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Dennis holding that bottle, taking a sip out of it. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Only things I'll say on the Dennis Yak thing is that I think they have to, they use it a little bit early on, but I think they got to use more of those high pick and rolls. Like I'm talking as soon as they get across half court, those drag screens, they're really beneficial just to extend the defense and give Dennis and Yak space to create those 2-on-1s. And then also we shouldn't see any like pick and rolls between those two at the top of the key. They should all be like empty side stuff to me.
Okay.
Just to help them have more space on the court. And then from there, like maybe you have some off ball actions. Maybe you have Pascal, who's just some great cutting against the Pistons. You have that going, but that's kind of where I'd land on it. It shouldn't be your primary, but maybe there are days, like especially on a night like tonight, where you have, mm-hmm. you know, a couple of bigs that are mobile, but also foul prone. Maybe you can, you know, draw a few fouls, get downhill. And then from there, you're kind of cooking with the other parts of your offense. So, but then moving on to a Scotty Barnes at pick and roll or Scotty at point guard in general.
Yeah.
Where are you with Scotty? Is he getting enough reps at that position? Because right now he's at what, 3.1 pick and roll reps per game. And you mentioned the turnover problems that Dennis has. Well, Scotty's like the exact opposite because he's only turning over the ball at 5% compared to Dennis's at 16.3. But anyways, Scotty Barnes, is he getting enough point guard reps?
I mean, I think so. First off, it's exclusively coming with the second unit. Right. And so with the starting group, you're very rarely seeing Scotty run the point for the starters. It's pretty clearly Dennis is running point for the starting group. Anytime Dennis is out there, he's running point. I mean, you're even seeing now 2-point lineups with him and Malachi together. I think they
We're desperate for shooting.
Desperate for shooting. Maybe even desperate for some more ball handling, some better decision making. But in general, you know, Scotty's had to run the point in the times when Dennis has sat. Now, there's been enough of those moments where those two guys are not sharing the floor together. I also think late in the games, like Scotty has the ball in his hands, you know, the way it should be, which is enough. I mean, assuming he's in the game, obviously that's what happened in that Celtics game.
Oh, get in late, boy, but still bothering.
I know. he's a rookie coach. His intentions were good. He didn't want to overplay his starters. So, you know,
what would Nick Nurse do? You can rest in the timeout.
Nick Nurse would win the game and forget about everything else, which I think, you know, it's a different approach and it's for a different team.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, I think Scotty on the whole, like if you want to take away some of the pick and roll touches from Dennis, I wouldn't mind. Like Dennis is pretty high in terms of his touches per game and things like that. But I mean, overall, I think Scotty's getting the ball a decent amount. I actually don't mind when Scotty's not running point because I think it sets him up to score a little bit better as well. Yeah. One of the issues I think with him with the second unit is he's got to call his own number, and I think he's very naturally unselfish. But I also think that when you're the point guard, you got to get yourself into that offense and then maybe get it back and then maybe then go attack. Like that just takes a lot of time. If you cut out the middle man, you have someone else bring the ball up, set up Scotty in a position to score. You know, you at least reduce one of the steps and make your offense run a little bit faster as well. But I mean, like in general, like everyone's like thrilled about what Scotty's doing, and yeah, I mean, I think he's getting the ball enough, but, you know, no one's arguing against more touches for Scotty.
Sure thing. There are people arguing about how much Dennis is getting the ball. They're feeling like it's a little bit too much. Also on his credit, 42.9 catch and shoot percentage so far this season. Another thing that he's delivering on,
right.
Probably, you know, building off of that German national team offseason, he continues to make his threes. That's a great sign. But if you want to move him off ball more, give Scotty more touches. I mean, his pick and roll game, it's so fun to watch because I think he's getting more confident with his ball handling. So that way he's able to get more cerebral and he just has that confidence. And now he's surveying the court more and he's able to find those cutters and just like the range of passes he can make because of his height is where it's just so special. And considering some of these runners he's hitting, like he gets 1 foot in the paint and he's just like vaulting up and may do a toilet bowl around, but he's hitting those shots. It's been so fun to watch him get more of these touches and also execute them.
Yeah. I mean, look, this is what everybody wants. Like all season, we talked about the Raptors, whether they should rebuild, not rebuild, whatever. Like the Raptors fan base is like fairly divided among a number of fronts. The one thing everyone can agree on is that everyone wants to see the ball more in Scotty's hands and for him to do more with it. And that's exactly what he's done this season. Yeah. And that doesn't even factor in how good he's been defensively. So yeah, I mean, he's the one guy where I'm like, just whatever they're doing with him, like just keep going and keep empowering him too. Cause I think he does feel like very empowered in this offense under Darko. And you know, I think that's led to a higher engagement level too.
Well, funny you mentioned that Darko, after the last game, he said that he feels like Scotty has to narrow his focus a little bit. And he gave this analogy about a player who has, like, you know, one skill set, a very good skill set. You know, they're a role player. A person who has two, I mean, they could be a starter. And then a person who has, like, three very good skills, he's like, that's probably an all-star. But if you get four or five, maybe you're in the G League. because you just can't be good at everything. You're better off being like the jack of all trades thing is good, but you want to have like three things that make you extremely powerful on the court. And he mentioned Scotty in that vein. And it's funny for a Scotty to realize that or to hear it, is that like you're in high school, like we're trying to figure out what do we want to do with our lives. And so you have to like figure out what are those three things. And to his credit, like we're looking at the development he's made this past season and what he's doing with these touches. It must be a hard thing for him to look at like three things that he wants to focus on when his game is still kind of evolving.
Yeah. Not that I wanted this, because I heard this from Darko as well. And when I heard it, my reaction was like, I don't know, actually. I was like, yeah, you know, like I think LeBron's good at one of the three things. And I think Kawhi's good at one of the three things. And yeah, I mean, look, listen, I actually don't mind for Scotty to like dabble and try pretty much whatever he wants to do on the court. You know, and so I understand what he's saying, like in terms of like splitting your focus and then you end up having sort of nothing. But I think what's been really promising is that there's already really good things he came into the league with. Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see the playmaking, you see the defense right away. And those things were great. You see the hustle as well. The basketball IQ is really high for him, too. So, you know, the more that he wants to dabble on shooting, like I'm not worried that he's going to lose the other skills. I actually just want to see him add and build. So I'm going to disagree with Darko on this one, but you know, I think Darko overall has done a great job with Scotty. So, I mean, sure. I think I'm not disagreeing with the overall approach, but I do hear what he's saying. But to me, it's really been the most exciting thing about this season is seeing Scotty dabble and try these new things and it working out for him. That's the most important thing. If it didn't work out for him, we'd be like, all right, this is a development year or whatever. We're the Detroit Pistons, but we're not. We're actually a competitive team because Scotty's made this jump.
Poor Pistons. My goodness.
Sorry, man. That team is wow. Poor guy. Like, poor Monty Williams, man.
Seriously, like what did you get yourself into? I want to be happy about the Raptors and their ball move. It's all fun, but like that was a bad, bad team they faced.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh. Well. Goodness.
Spent a lot of the third quarter answering emails. it's one of those. It's one of those.
Yeah. You mentioned Pascal Siakam, that being a reliable source of offense. And do you quibble with the idea of the offense kind of diverting to what it was last season to a way? Like we saw it early in the season, Pascal was taking a lot more threes, a lot more spacing opportunities for him. Mm-hmm. And it kind of felt like him and Scotty were taking turns. Like one of them was going to be a spacer, the other one's at the top of the floor. And, but now with this addition, it seems like, and obviously Pascal, if you didn't hear the quote, he was pretty happy about how things have gone over the past few games. Cause this is his wheelhouse. This is his game. But is it 0.5 basketball? I mean, I feel like Darko's had to kind of change the game plan a little bit, to appease and get the best out of Pascal Siakam. But I think to some degree, that's how it has to go.
I think that's coaching. That's management at any level. Like you definitely have an idea in mind. You definitely want to stick to your principles. You want to be firm, but you also want to be flexible and you want to be pragmatic in this case. Pascal's just not going to be a good player or very effective player. If you're just asking him to play as a spacer, he's not a good 3-point shooter. And not only that, like he's in a really bad 3-point shooting slump to the point where like he made a three against the Pistons and he like threw his hands up, like finally, thank you. And it's like, yeah, I mean, that's not, you know, the sign of a most confident 3-point shooter. But, you know, I think there are lots of ways that the Raptors can use Pascal. And that I think Darko is learning sort of as he goes on that front. But to me, that's an encouraging sign that he's found ways to get Pascal going. Like the last, he had like two really quiet nights, 10 points against Philly, 8 points against San Antonio. In the 6 games since, he's averaged 24 points, 8 rebounds a game, 5 assists, shooting 56% from the field and getting to the foul line 6 times. Now, of course, he's got to get his 3-point percentage up. I mean, I think he's hit like 2 threes, maybe 1 in this range. Once again, wow, pathetic fallacy in the room. And then I think the other thing too is his free throws, right? I think there's like a noticeable like hitch in the free throw, which is leading to a lot of points that are being left on the board for somebody who should at least be in the 75% range. But yeah, like what's the problem here? Like the Raptors half court offense was really in the dumps. They weren't really able to find anything out of Pascal on a consistent basis when you mostly asked him to be a shooter. So, you know, you do this thing now where I feel like it doesn't really eat into Scotty's opportunities.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
And that's what I'm like ultimately looking at. If Scottie's been able to be great, Pascal's been able to be great. If you have two all-star level players, then this team kind of actually has a chance to be competitive. Like long term, like do you want to only have guys with 0.5 principles? Probably. Like probably that is the vision. But until the front office changes the personnel, if the ask from that front office is for this team to be competitive and also to be competitive but also to develop. Yeah. This is the way to do it. And I think Darko's actually found that time. So I appreciate that he's been flexible and firm at the same time. But on Pascal's own perspective, like he's got to find a way to get that jumper going, man. Like long-term for him and also long-term for the Raptors, like they're going to need Pascal to not shoot like 1-for-20 from three and also sure. to make his free throws at the bare minimum.
Yeah. Going back to when he finally did make a shot, did you see Jamma's reaction on the bench? He gave like look to your homies when they do something, we see something cool. They're like, yo, look what he did. Look what he did. His eyes got all big. Everyone's been waiting for him to hit that shot. He's currently shooting 24.5%. If you need a reminder, last season was 32%. And on catch and shoot threes, similar number, 31% this season. Last season was around 34% as well. Like, look, like the shot, I mean, I dissected myself. I talked to CJ about it. Mm-hmm. Shout out Strictly Hoops. He says that it feels like it's more of a mental thing than anything else because the flow looks good. But then I look at also, you know, the way he misses shots, sometimes it's very
it's erratic.
Long. It is. And I find sometimes it's his guide hand. It's shooting. It's going a little bit left. And other times it's really deep. But it seems like the stroke is what it should be. So it does kind of indicate to me that there's just like a mental thing. And also with his free throws, I don't know, maybe it's just me. When guys have a lot of movement, like upper body to lower body with their free throws, it just doesn't, it's like a higher chance that they're not going to win. And he has like a lot of movement. It's a lot of coordination between everything for them to go in. And then he just stops like right at the top. And then he follows three, like a nice little smooth motion.
It stops. That's why there's a hitch in the free throw form. It's like so noticeable when he does it in the free throw. Less so when he shoots the ball from three. But like there was a game, I think, which game was it? Against the Celtics. And I think he might have. He did a good job in the Celtics game. Mostly scored mid-range and also around the basket. But
yeah, only one free throw in that game.
He was there was a stretch there where he like missed like 10 straight like warm-up threes in a row. To the point where he's like, all right, let me just break up my warm-up practice and then just get a layup just to see the ball go through the basket before I go back to... Yeah, because I'm a sicko. I love watching warm-ups. But it's like, to me, that suggests, like, look, I mean, you know, he's always been inconsistent as a three-point shooter, but like closer to average, I would say, maybe slightly below average. Right now, it became like he just... It just eliminated that from his shot diet. And yeah, I mean, it's going to need to be there no matter what system that they run, because you just need your all-star level player to be able to knock down some threes. He's done it before in the past too. So whatever it is, whether he needs to find his old rhythm, you know, change up his training, whatever it is specifically, but yeah, he's got to get back there. That's pretty vital.
And the rest of the team, three-point shooting has not been a strength of this team for a few seasons now. Right now they're 23rd in corner threes, 28th in non-corner threes, and I believe 27th overall in just three-point shooting in general. Like it's like a no-no where you help on the strong side, but teams are doing that against the Raptors because probably can. And we're seeing the box and elbows defense zoning up the weak side and it's clogging the middle. Like I look at players like a Chris Boucher, who actually, credit to him, over the last six games, 9-15 from three. So a credit to him. But Jalen McDaniels, Otto Porter Jr. when he's healthy, Malachi Flynn's turned it around a little bit. Precious teased us with a somewhat of a transition three last game. These are the guys that we're kind of relying upon to help stabilize the three-point shooting. Look at the starters. The 21st in the league in three-point shooting amongst the starters. And that's with Pascal Siakam just demoralizing that percentage. But then you go to the bench unit and they plummet to 27th. So, you know, if Pascal is taking less threes, which, you know, going off of that last game against the Pistons, where he's doing a lot more cutting compared to three-point shooting, you know, maybe if those guys are able to find a groove, and we keep on saying it, I want to see it. if they are able to, I'm curious if they can convince some defenses to not clog the paint as much. I don't know.
Any smart, well-prepared and well-drilled team should be packing a paint against the Raptors, like full stop, you know. If you aren't doing that, then I actually have some concerns as to how prepared you are. But I look, listen, like with the guys you bring off the bench to hit the threes outside of Otto, all those guys are inconsistent shooters. Malachi closer to like average, maybe even above average. I mean, he mostly just takes like above the break threes. Some of them are pull ups as well, so it's gonna bring down your percentage a little bit. But you know, those guys aren't really gonna consistently bring you like great three point shooting. I think the key for me is just like, you know, like how much can the Raptors get like more catch and shoot threes, because I think they should be at least a little bit better on those than anything else. I think they're actually close to league average at catch and shoot threes, which is was a little surprising when I looked up the number. But yeah,
23rd.
Like there's
23rd. Yeah.
Okay, 23rd. But like percentage wise, it's not like too far from like where the league average is on that front. But I think for the team, it's just like there's not a lot of pull up 3-point shooting, period. I mean, you know, unless we see like a significant skill jump, and maybe we're seeing that from Scotty. You know, it was great when he hit the pull-up three against San Antonio. It was even greater when Dennis said, he was like, yeah, we were in the timeout, and Darko was like, okay, these are the options here. And then Scotty was like, but I could just step back for three, and he tied the game, sent it to overtime with that one. So that was sick. But like, barring any like significant skill jumps, like where the Raptors need to find more is sort of catch and shoot threes. And at that point, it's like, look, can guys just fire with some confidence, right? Wasn't that one of the practices that Darko had, was like, let's just clear for 2 hours and just like shoot the three with confidence. I mean, like, honestly, when you and I go in the gym, I would say like 90% of the drills are guys shooting threes. So it's never like
these and guys Pascal's hitting them too. That's the weird part. He's hitting them in practice.
Yeah. But I mean, ultimately, like, that's something that, you know, if they're going to get more 3-point shooting, it's probably from that. But are they going to be able to convince teams to not help off shooters? Probably not. No.
Yeah.
Like the only guy that people are not helping off of is probably OG. And they're not like, let's be honest, they're not exactly like, you know, sticking to OG like they're sticking to Klay Thompson or Steph Curry. Like they're saying mostly like, okay, we're probably not going to help off of him, but we have like three other guys who can help in addition to whoever's on the ball. So,
yeah. And also it's a credit to like Pascal and Scotty and even like, you know, Jakob around the paint, is that you're going to help off them because you're just going to play the percentages. Like those are guys who finish well around the rim, and you're going to take your chances with the Malachi Flynn, even though he's shooting what, 37% from three. Love those relocation threes from that. Actually, your thoughts on Malachi, because he's really just taking step by step each game. The moment that sticks out to me from his rookie year is like actually in preseason, and he was picking up LaMelo ball like full court, and he was just all up into him. And that's like, okay, this is like the identity of Fred VanVleet, of Kyle Lowry, of like that aggression and that intensity. And you know,
wait, his are you talking about preseason 2020 preseason?
Or I'm talking about his rookie season.
We haven't played the Hornets in preseason since that time, but yeah, you're right. Yeah, keep going. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And that's like, that's the moment that's always stood out to me. Like that's, I found that was his identity. And it seems like he's finding that mojo again of just like relentless forward progress with his defense. Dennis has said probably on your show too that, you know, he wants Malachi to pick up full court. Like that's what Dennis does. Like he knows like this is the kind of pressure we want to apply. And also I think in some ways it's like what Nick Nurse was doing with Scotty Barnes last year, is like it engages him, it gets him going when he was making him a point of attack defender. And I think that's good for Malachi too. It's helping him.
Look, man, I think this whole reclamation of Malachi Flynn has been like really heartwarming. I've really enjoyed it. It makes me say awe, like when I hear everyone talking about, like, you know, Darko saying like, what's the thing you learned about Malachi? It's like, you know, I learned that I want to put a smile on his face, and that Dennis putting his arm around his shoulder and even giving him that opportunity, because like, look, like he was in real danger of falling out of the rotation. Well, I mean, he was already falling out of the rotation, but like falling out of the league, you just don't know. Like you get your first chance here with this team. Most teams don't stick by you for 4 years when you don't show anything in the first 3 years. And no offense, but it wasn't like enough, right? Most teams will pull the plug, but the Raptors actually stuck through with it. Give them a different
opportunity. Or they signed Jeff Doughton Jr.
that too, you know, but like, like they, you know what? And if they show this much faith in him, like, you know, I would have hoped for his sake that he would have shown something. Because if he didn't, after all of this, then it would really clearly definitively say to both the Raptors and maybe even other teams that there's no future here. But I think there is something there. And I think that for this team in particular, look, you definitely need guard play. You need guard help. Mm-hmm. And honestly, if he can play at this level, you might be even willing to re-sign him to a cheaper deal. And all of a sudden you create an asset, or at least you create a backup point guard, but forget the assets for a second. But yeah, I mean, I think he's been all right. I think he's played with more confidence. I like when he's scrapping on defense. I like when he's picking up full court. He's probably only going to play like 15 minutes, 20 minutes tops. You might as well expend all your energy out there, right? What are you saving that for? The 3-point shooting, I mean, it's not unlike a lot of backup point guards where they come off the bench and play, kind of play 3 and D and don't play make all that much. Mm-hmm. What I would like to see from Malachi is like maybe set up Scotty to be more of a scorer in that group where Malachi takes on the ball handling so that Scotty can get open off screens, off whatever, off ball, and then you deliver the pass to him and then you kind of like do your job from there.
Yeah.
But other than that, like I think that like this has been one of the most promising things for the Raptors this season. Well, not promising, just like it's just heartwarming, man. I think a lot of people lost faith in Malachi, but the Raptors didn't. And turns out the Raptors might have been right. And the payoff might be not huge. Like, I don't see him being a future starter. But, you know, coming into this season, I didn't think there was, like, a long-term future in the NBA period. So to see him make this jump is good for him personally and also for the Raptors.
Masai's patience has been ridiculed quite a bit over the years. Yeah. But this might be a case where maybe it worked out. I think he liked Malachi, and you like his personality, his character. I think they've always liked
him. Man. Sorry, right? I've become soft, man. I'm sorry. when you get to know these guys at least a little bit, I'm like, yeah, I'm rooting for all of you. Wow, turns out it's about more than what happens on the court. It's also who you are off the court, and he is a great guy. So,
yeah, good
for Malachi.
He's also getting more and more jacked every single year. It seems like, which is again,
must,
awesome.
Must, but maybe he needed it. Who knows?
Sure,
maybe he needed it. Yeah.
Yeah. Jakob Poeltl at the five, being a creator for the Raptors. So that elbow offense, he is fourth in the league in elbow touches behind Sabonis, Jokic, Vucevic, and then you got Jakob Poeltl. He's only averaging 2.1 field goal attempts on those, 3.4 points, and compared to at least Sabonis and Jokic, I'm not sure what the Bulls are doing with Vucevic. It seems like he's just like handing it off and then he just kind of spaces out. Yeah. But for those guys, like, they're around 5.2 points, 6.4 points. And we're running back into the problem that we talked about with the pick and roll is that, you know, and there have been a few moments, just like these flashes where Yak will just like fake a pass and he's driving to the rim and he finishes at the basket. And I love seeing that stuff, but he's a smart player. He did this with the Spurs. What is the ceiling for Jakob Poeltl, at least within like this iteration of the Raptors offense? Like, how much can you rely on him to be kind of a playmaker at the top of the key with this offense? Are there parts that we haven't really used yet to get more out of it?
I think there is still more that you can get out of it. I think that I like the idea of throwing the ball to Yak when it's a little bit hard for some of the other wings to get open. Of course, that will require guys to screen for each other and get each other open off ball. And so I think that level of coordination probably hasn't been there as much. Like, it's not the most instinctive thing for, you know, Dennis to set a back screen for Pascal off the ball while Jakob has it. And then Jakob delivers
a good one, too.
Yeah. And a good one, too. Yeah. So, like, you know, I don't think Pascal is much of a screener. I think Scotty's probably a good screener, too. But Scotty's usually the guy you want to get screened for him to score as well. So, I mean, like, it's a variety of things. But I do like Jakob's playmaking out of the high post. Like, it always feels very satisfying when he gets it there. He's had a couple errant passes as well. Like, I'm not trying to say that it's entirely on the rest of the guys, but you know, for me, it does feel like a secondary option, though. I don't know if it's like I'm coming down the floor and the first thing I want to do is get the ball in Yak's hands. Like, it's not the same as the Kings, where you've got the ball down the court and the first thing you want to do is, well, sometimes Sabonis pushes the break himself and then gets some teams into doing that. Like, obviously, Jakob's not doing all that. And then, of course, what in terms of the scoring out of the post, like, or out of those elbow touches, like, yeah, I mean, if you had a mid-range jumper, if you had the ability to put it on the deck a couple times, I think in the first time the Raptors played the Celtics, I saw Yak try to aggressively take it against Porzingis, and he actually scored a couple of times. I don't mind that. I actually wouldn't mind if Yak called his own number, because he's always looking to pass first. And I do think that there's an element where it's like, okay, if you're going to constantly play in this role, you know, I do want to see some aggression from you. It's kind of what we talked about in the pick and roll with Dennis, right? You want to see Dennis show some scoring, you know, determination, so that way that, you know, there's more space for Yak to slip in behind and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, it's another kind of like third tier option for me. Again, like, I would very much prefer the ball to be in Scotty's hands and Pascal's hands as much as possible.
Sure.
And then the rest of the guys can just play off of that if they can, or if you can
space
run
space properly. Space properly.
Clearly they don't always do that. And then the bench has very little unifying presence, you know? And so that's probably a bigger issue. But I think there is a little bit more you can get out of Yak, but there's also a limited ceiling.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I love like the aspects of Darko's game, like the brush screens, the throw aheads that they enjoy doing, especially in transition. Like, these are good signs, and the process is getting better. I'm looking at the numbers here, and like off ball screens, they're sixth, but they're like 25th in points in that category. And then like in cuts, they're 28th. off-ball screens, yeah, they're 25th. So they're trying these things, but they're not able to get the execution and the spacing around the rim to actually finish around the basket. So this is, again, going back to some of their three-point shooting woes. But with that said, I mean, I really enjoy watching Pascal, OG, and Jakob kind of run their three-man, and those short-range passes between them are so fun to watch. And like, that's how you get the best out of those three, especially with the cutting. And but it's all about, you know, how are you optimizing your spacing? That's why I respect Pascal Siakam. Like a few games ago when I think it was Blake Murphy, actually, was asking about, you know, working in the post. And Pascal, like, he made a point of saying, he's like, the best part about it is like, yeah, we're going to get a good touch out of it, but also we can just like get our spacing right. Like, and it's kind of slowing down the game to speed it up eventually. Once you're able to draw that double, then it's kick, swing, swing, and then you're getting a good shot. And they ran that all the time last season, and it worked for them, especially when they got Jakob Poeltl and they had the pick and roll with Fred. So I'm not sure what the ceiling is of Yak as a hub, so to speak, but I do think that that's a good process within 0.5 basketball. I just think that, you know, maybe as we wrap up the podcast, we could touch on the best 0.5 basketball lineup the Raptors can put out there right now. What is your thought?
I mean, look, listen, the starting five is not bad on that front. I really don't think it's like terrible for 0.5 basketball, especially when Pascal gets back to his regular level of three-point shooting. Just like, again, if Pascal got to average, then all of a sudden I actually don't mind this. But the grouping I had out there, so I had Dennis and Yak, OG Scotty, and then Otto as the floor spacer in this sort of scenario. Yes. Otto just, he does, he, you know what, he's just a really smart player. I should never worry about Otto when he's on the court. But I think this one will give you some decent spacing. I think you can still run your pick and roll with Dennis and Jakob. You can still have Scotty running the point with this group if you want to, creating the offense. And then you have two really good shooters in OG and Otto, who can capitalize off of this. Because again, I think, as you mentioned, the Raptors run good offense, but the talent to capitalize on those advantages created aren't always that great. Like the payoff for those aren't great, but that's a skill issue more than it's an execution issue. And then my secondary option with this, to include Pascal, would be something like Scotty, OG, Jakob, Pascal, and Gary. So in this case, Gary comes in for Dennis. I think that what this does is that you force kind of Scotty and Jakob to run pick and roll, or and then that's sort of your central action. Maybe you put it into the post for Pascal and you generate your advantages there. But then, of course, you have OG and Gary. Again, like, my goal is hopefully you get like two off-ball shooters that you can have. I know most teams have like three, maybe four. Raptors at two is already pretty good. So these were the two ideas I came up with. What about you?
I had the latter. That was mine. Otto Porter Jr., like, he can truly just slot in everywhere. I like him so much that I almost don't want to remove him from the role that he's in.
Yeah, sure, sure.
But not that it has to be a starting unit, but I like the idea of Gary just has a bit more penetration ability and able to finish at a few more levels, although it's like kind of negligible to some degree, but I've liked to sometimes he's able to get to the basket and it's looked pretty good. But that was my lineup, and we'll see where things go with the Toronto Raptors this season. It's been fun. We'll see how they do with the Orlando Magic. Then obviously they got the Pacers coming up. The road back to 500 is on. William Liu, thank you so much, man.
A long march. Thank you. I appreciate you. All right.
Rate, review, subscribe, like on YouTube. We'll see you guys later. Bye-bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.